You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle.
There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. 'Cause she never wore socks, she had a pet snake, she bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do, so she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek, and Ari Ashkenazi.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren. With me today is...
Chris.
And joining us once again, we have our special guest, Wes.
Hello.
You guys may remember Wes from last week when we did not foreshadow him at all. He is an editor at Mythgreens. He writes many mean things about our articles.
I'm the worst. So horrible.
Yeah. This is absolutely true. Okay. So I hope both of you brought your percentile dice and your sanity chart, because today we are talking about cosmic horror in role-playing games. Cosmic horror, known to many as Lovecraftian horror. I try not to call it that just because it's more than just Lovecraft, for one thing, and also Lovecraft was racist and terrible. So I try to call it cosmic horror because it's more accurate.
But doesn't cosmic kind of suggest that it's, like, in space?
Maybe, but that's the term, right? I didn't decide on it. But
all right, I'll use it as long as you start using urban fantasy.
No. Stupid urban fantasy. The supernatural takes place almost entirely in the country. It can't be urban fantasy, it's rural fantasy. Like, cosmic horror, the reason it's called that is because it is, like, a very specific kind of horror where you are basically... The horror comes from this unknowing or unknowable threat of some kind, right? Like, you know, that's just the way the universe is set up is against you. It's not a specific, like, entity that means you harm. It's not a bad guy. It's just like, you know, the old gods will rise and they will destroy you, not because they hate you, but just because you're there while they're rising up, you know, that sort of thing. So Wes, does that about match up with your definition of cosmic horror?
Yeah, I think I kind of understand that. I like how, you know, cosmic does make me think of space, and that kind of gets into the whole humans are insignificant in the grander scheme of this horror, right?
Yeah, I would consider cosmic horror to be just very psychological and very... unlike other forms of horror, it seems to be less reliant on, like, physical danger and more, like, psychological disturbance.
Yeah, for sure. And horror in general is difficult in role-playing games because it's so mood-dependent, right? It's like, your players have to sign on. It's so easy to ruin the mood if someone is like, I'm not really interested in being scared, I'm just gonna make silly jokes. It's like, well, there goes the atmosphere. Now nothing's scary anymore, right?
Yeah, and with role-playing and games in general, it's so much easier to make the mood silly than it is to make it serious.
This is true.
It only takes, like, one person.
It makes sense, though, too, right? Like, maybe you meet up on a Saturday after a work week, and you just kind of want to hang out and unwind, not necessarily, like, focus and scare the pants off of yourself.
But I think it's also just, like, if you have, you know, a group of six, and three people are acting silly, and three people are acting serious, the mood is silly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
The silliness just sort of overpowers the seriousness. It's like you need every single player on board if you want the game to actually have a horror feel.
Which is why when I run cosmic horror in role playing games, and cosmic horror is not my specialty as a GM, but I do run it occasionally. Usually, what I end up doing is I end up with what's more of a survival action game with cosmic horror elements. Because I have, especially with players that I know really well, I kind of know how far into the cosmic horror they'll be willing to go before they're like, nope, I'm not interested in this anymore. I feel too disempowered, and I'm gonna make jokes or break the mood or not have fun in some other way, right? And that's especially with the way I run systems like Delta Green, where in Delta Green, you know, you guys are government agents, part of this, like, powerful conspiracy. So there's, like, a certain amount of empowerment that comes into it right there that can kind of clash with the idea of feeling insignificant. But you can, like, you can throw in elements of it, right? Like, you can make, like, a little bit, you can be like, oh, wow, there's, like, we uncovered how the universe actually works, and it has these, like, laws of reality that are terrible and will probably destroy us one day. And then once they once they've absorbed that, I'm like, all right, but now you can make that stop by, like, blowing up this building.
Okay, yeah.
Right? That sort of thing. Just because if you don't give them something at the end, I have found that most players will just kind of come away annoyed, because they'll be like, oh, well, what was the point of that?
Yeah, it's a little hard, because I feel like with cosmic horror, you know, your players have to be, you know, have agency. They want to be able to solve problems. That's why they're there. But with cosmic horror especially, like, the idea of having a character like in Delta Green, where your purpose is to handle the supernatural, whereas, you know, the cosmic horror, it's not supposed to be something that can be handled. I mean, that's kind of the point. That's why the characters are supposed to go insane. So that sort of provides some kind of contradiction. It's like, how do we retain this sort of, like, helpless feel, while at the same time making it so players can actually do something?
I was thinking also about this, that kind of dependent on cosmic horror, at least, like, reading Lovecraft and other kinds of stories that share that same type of feel, it's really strongly based, like, the horror is strongly based on the fact that something is unknown or unknowable. And it's really hard to, like, convey unknown, unknowable, unnameable to a group of people on a shared, like, role-playing game where, like, you're depending on, like, words getting you places, right? Like, trust me, everybody, it's horrible, right? Like, I mean...
You've definitely hit on that. And that's even a problem just in straight written Lovecraft works. Like, there's a scene in Dagon where, like, the main character sees something and he's like, I saw an undescribable shape. And it's like, really? Was it undescribable? I suspect you could have described it.
Yeah.
So I found that the best way to accomplish that idea, because it is true that if you don't describe something, often what the audience or the players will imagine is scarier than anything you could say, right? So what you can do there is, rather than saying, like, telling them that they see an unknowable evil, you put them in situations where where their senses are hampered, right? Like, you know, the last game that I did, because I feel like darkness is kind of overplayed, I had monsters that glowed so brightly that it was impossible to see around them. So the players never actually got a good look at what they looked like. They were just, like, they would just start to notice it was really bright, and then that they had to, like, close their eyes, and then things would start catching on fire, and they were like, what's going on, right? And that, I'd like to think that worked pretty well. You know, Chris can tell me that game wasn't actually scary and that they were all laughing secretly when I wasn't looking. But
yeah, no, that game was a great game. Really enjoyed that game. And I think the light technique did work. The sort of, like, you can't, so bright you can't look at it. I mean, it was definitely, again, it was a Delta Green game. Everything was handleable by the players as it has to be. So I don't know if it really evoked the, like, the psychological terror, but, like, to some extent, in a game like Delta Green, I'm not sure you can. But the monsters were very cool, for sure.
Right, and it's like that. What I was going for there was, like, a little bit of creep, right? Like, I'm not trying to make you guys throw up your hands and be like, "Oh no, we've gone crazy." It's like, well, that's kind of creepy. Like, maybe we should edge around that while we try to solve this problem. That sort of thing.
I think you've had you had another game that I think was using the Burning Wheel system that was a horror game. That had more, used a lot of mythic elements. It had, like, I think a minotaur and some other things in it that I think had a little bit more mystery, had mystery to it just because it was using that mythology.
Huh.
Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what game you're talking about.
It's where, okay, so everybody was, like, normal people who were invited to this, people who were invited to this banquet.
Right, okay.
Each one of them was matched with, like, a monster.
Yes, that was a World of Darkness game, yeah, that was where I used the concept of the sacrifice room, which is this thing that Romans would do sometimes, where they would make a small room in their house, and they would, like, put something valuable in it, and then just wall it up, and be like, we've sacrificed that to the gods, and, of course, they probably didn't ever actually put people in there, but there are, you know, definitely stories and myths that they would put people in there. One thing about cosmic horror, Wes, I would be really, because I know you've played a lot of Call of Cthulhu, right?
Yeah, and actually I'm more experienced with Trail of Cthulhu by Kenneth.
Oh, really?
Hyde. Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe you can tell me how Trail does this then, because, so we talked about how one of the things with cosmic horror is the, like, the way that the character reacts to it, right? They, like, they freak out, and they're scared or panicked or what have you, right? And Call of Cthulhu tries to simulate that with its sanity point system, which is, you know, reasonably successful, right? Like, you see something terrible or do something terrible, and you lose sanity points. That's, like, a fairly effective way of driving home to the player that this is serious business. How does Trail of Cthulhu handle that?
They definitely have a reservoir of sanity points. They also have a reservoir of stability points. And so when you create a character, it's kind of important that those things are kept track of, because characters involve two things in their several things, but two main things. And those are your pillars of sanity. And those are like guiding principles for your life, basically. You know, if you want a character to be religious, maybe a pillar of sanity for that character is Catholicism. And you choose a couple more of those. And then you would have sources of stability. And those would be things that, like, would calm you down, ground you. So maybe, you know, you want to be make a character who's a hard-drinking Catholic priest. And so, right, their pillar of sanity is based on Catholicism, that the world is moral, and if the character gets freaked out a little bit, they have a hard drink and their stability, you know, kind of gets set. And so, like, as you play the game, certain shocks take away from your stability pool, which have consequences depending on what level it's at. And then more massive shocks take away from your sanity pool. And that can get to the point where, like, a pillar of sanity could even be destroyed with a big enough blow, which really is mostly designed to kind of guide your role playing that, like, this thing happened and you've lost all faith in the Catholic Church, you know, like something like that.
So does your stability help you recover sanity, or?
Yeah, that's the thing, is you can never recover your sanity.
So what are the stability points used for? What's the difference when you take a hit to your stability?
Yeah, so like if you take your hit to your stability, maybe like a strong one, it's really based on role-playing guidelines for the character, and then the GM can step in if necessary. But if you take a few 3 points at a loss in one go, then you really should understand that your character's shaking, should be more reserved about leaving the current area if it feels like a safe space. If they take a bigger hit, then they might be cowering a bit. They might just refuse to go anymore. They might leave. Eventually, you can go negative, and that's when you start like acquiring more like personal like problems, usually in their mental, right? That, or where you might acquire a phobia. If something happens to you that's very traumatic in a forest and it puts you negative, you might have fear of like open spaces or trees or something like that.
But it sounds like the stability is mostly flavor.
It is mostly flavor, and it mostly just plays into how it affects your sanity. The sanity can be lost by seeing things or learning things, and so they do have a pool where you can gain Cthulhu Mythos points that can be used in the game, but even acquiring those like likely shatters at least one of your pillars of sanity because of this knowledge that hopefully would maybe come in handy in the quest, but probably ultimately doom your character.
That is one of the kind of counterintuitive things that crops up in Call of Cthulhu and anything around Lovecraft's work, is this idea that like learning things is bad. Like I've had no single issue that I've had with cosmic horror role-playing has been more difficult than getting players to wrap their heads around that one. Part of that is because I think that most of the time in real life, learning something weird and like shocking is like, you know, we humans are pretty resilient. We tend to be okay with that stuff unless it like flies in the face of something we really wanted to be true, which, you know, you can make that work, right? Like you can, you know, like if you have someone who has built their life around the idea that humans are inherently good, and then you like show them that human, like all this data that proves pretty conclusively that humans without like, you know, an overriding set of laws and punishments will just like murder each other in their sleep. That's the sort of thing I could see making someone lose sanity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, I'm not claiming that exists. I'm just using this as an example. But like, it gets weird when it's like, okay, so my character has gone crazy because I've learned that there are like aliens, and it's like, you know, like that doesn't strike me as, that doesn't feel particularly true, right? That doesn't feel like something I would go crazy over, or not go crazy, but like, that doesn't feel like something I would get so upset that it would like damage me in some way.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least today we're more used to the idea of aliens, right? Maybe in another time when we'd not thought so much about aliens, not had so many movies about aliens, the presence of aliens might be enough. But I do really think that turning that idea of knowledge as good on its head is really one of the essential things that makes Cosmic Horror different, especially since I think it creates this idea that like, that under the surface of the world is just some really terrifying stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, if more knowledge is bad because what you learn is horrifying, you know, it creates that general mood of, like, things just beyond sight being really disturbing. You know, this idea of a greater world that dwarfs you, that is hostile. And I think that the having knowledge to make you go insane is a really important part of that. So, yeah. But no, it is a lot of the stuff in cosmic horror, like the psychological horror of it, is really hard to get through. And if you're a writer, you can at least, you know, use some of that evocative telling technique and like polish your writing over and over again to create the right mood. But like, when you're in the moment with players,
oh man, I've run one game as the GM with using the trail system, and trail's good because, as we're talking about dealing with cosmic horror and stuff, like they have marked options in the book for like character creation and stuff for like a purist game, which is really trying to hit on that like psychological level where like the only kind of classes that the people can be are like antiquarians and like psychologists. And then there's like the more pulpy choices to be like, you know, a beat cop who can shoot these things dead. But I tried to run one that was just like a straight purist campaign. And, you know, I tried to just do so much by like making it all about like classical music set in Paris in the 20s. And really, like, the problem was just keeping player motivation up because they really wanted to play, but everything they learned in the game was basically like a big warning sign to like not pursue this any further. And so if you really role play a character, it's like, well, I probably should just like go back to England now. Like,
yep.
So
yeah,
that's like the. And so just double checking, were you playing, this was over a campaign, right? Like multiple sessions?
Yeah, we had three sessions.
So that is absolutely a problem with any kind of horror game, cosmic horror especially, right? Is the motivation to go back to this after that terrible experience you had last time. And like, in, you know, there's a reason why most Lovecraft stories aren't about the same protagonist. Which is one reason why a setting like Delta Green helps, right? Because this is specifically your job. Like, you work for an agency that does this for a living, right? And like, you have like your, you know, you can play up like your, either your patriotism or your desire to protect people or what have you that gets you doing this sort of thing. One option that I really like for the new Call of Cthulhu, because the new Call of Cthulhu lets you basically decide how wealthy your character is by spending credit rating points. What I like to do is have one player who I know is like, will make a character who's like really devoted to like uncovering the mysteries of the occult and what have you, have them be super rich. And then they just pay the other characters to stay.
That's, nice. That's, yeah, there you go.
that's your motivation, is that this is your paycheck. And like, yeah, I guess, but you could leave and try to find another job. But I mean, come on, man. You're all messed up and you see things in the walls. Nobody gonna hire you. But, you know, this lady over here, she got like mad money and she wants to go investigate that weird temple. So get on board, right?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever, I mean, I guess for a campaign, trying to use a personal reasons and personal motivations for every single session might be hard. But at least for one shot, it seems like you could have, I mean, like Mulder in X-Files, right? His motivation mm-hmm. is that he saw his sister get abducted by aliens and now he's like trying to figure out what happened to her. Or you could, you know, have like a parent who like their kid went missing and now they're trying to like, you know, you could create, I feel like personal desperation would really help add to the cosmic horror mood. But again, depending on how many players you have, trying to set that up for all of them, much less for multiple sessions, would get increasingly difficult.
Right. And like, that's one of the issues is that in most like cosmic horror stories, not all of them, but in most of them, you'll notice that the protagonist, they often, their objective in so much as they have one is often to just get out alive, right?
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. like if they had an objective at the beginning, they quickly abandon it once they see like terrible monsters and stuff, right? That doesn't work for player characters outside of a one shot. That's one of the biggest issues that Call of Cthulhu has. Like, the 7th edition has this whole guide about how to conduct investigations in the 1920s, which is really useful. It, like, tells you, like, what kind of library resources were available and, like, how to realistically, like, ask people questions and, like, how to find information and stuff. And that's all great. But then it, like, stops once you discover what's going on. And it's like, well, what are you supposed to do then? You know, do you, like, as a role-playing game, chances are you need an objective beyond just, like, discover what it is and say, well, that's gross, and leave, right? So, like, what do you do when that happens? That is one of the points at which having an organization like Delta Green is useful, just to get to an ending, right? Because you have a protocol to follow at that point.
I think one of the issues that runs into is players are so used to wanting to, like, win, and... it's hard to convey, right, that like fleeing is how you can win the game in this situation. I remember, have you guys ever played Mansions of Madness?
No, I don't think so.
So imagine like a Call of Cthulhu or a Trail or whatever, role-playing game, but basically that set up, comes in a box and you set up kind of tile pieces to create a house. There's a bunch of clues that you lay out and everybody has like their player cards and then they go and they investigate this house and things happen and there's a game master and things like that. But there's conditions for victory that get revealed. And I remember the first time we played it in this giant mansion, they get into the basement, they find this thing, and the condition for victory was get out of the house before X number of turns happens, because then it comes down and everybody dies. And I remember thinking, like, that's great. Like, escape should totally be a valid way to win this. Because, you know, you want to kind of feel like a hero when you go and play these games. And cosmic horror is hard to feel heroic, but knowing that you got out alive mostly unscathed should be rewarding, I would think.
That's true, but like, and you can do that in a one shot, but in a campaign, it's like, why do we keep investigating these things if all we do is run away from them? Yeah. Like, why would we do that? And your other option is, well, we could just be the unluckiest group of people in the world that, like, every week a new Lovecraftian horror falls on our heads and we have to run from it, which could have its own, you know, grinding horror to it, I suppose, but...
Yeah, I think that works better when you have your characters all wake up and they have all been kidnapped and moved to some dangerous location they have to get out. As opposed to having the characters go into the dangerous location and then realize they just have to leave again.
Right. or if I say completely for no reason, they wake up and they have amnesia.
Yeah, like if they wake up on a boat.
Yeah, please.
And there's a guy who's dead on the floor and they don't know what's going on or who they are and they have to figure it out. Like,
yeah, please buy my RPG product, available on
thecreates.com. I guess if you wanted to set up a campaign like that, you could have, like, we're in this weird, like, maze world, and, you know, each session we go through a different, like, strange obstacle course or room in order to try to eventually get out.
That is something that I've seen people do. I've seen people run campaigns in the Dreamlands of Call of Cthulhu, and the Dreamlands are, like, an entire dimension of, like, Lovecraftian horror, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that if you have no contrast, then the horror wears off pretty quickly, right? Like, that's one of the reasons why I like to hint at it around the edges of my game, because if it shows up too often, then it's like, oh well, it's another face-devouring monster, but whatever. And like, that's a problem when you have an entire campaign set in the Dreamlands, because it's like, oh look, another impossible thing that happened.
Yeah.
It's only like the 10th time that's happened to us, right? Whereas In a standard game, your characters can, like, go home, right? They can, like, hang out for a bit and be like, everything's normal now. Everything's fine. And then you go back to the problem. And then it's like, you get, you know, you kind of refresh, you know? You get used to the normalness before the weird stuff happens again.
Okay, I've got it.
Yeah.
So every session, they wake up. And everything seems to be normal. Normal house.
No.
And then slowly, they discover they're dreaming. you know, and they have to escape the dream. And then they wake up. That, and then the next session, everything seems normal until they discover that once again, they are still dreaming.
This is, all right, that's good. You've solved cosmic horror for us. Thank you, Chris.
Hooray.
I cannot imagine anything that would get irritating faster.
Yeah. So we have a few minutes left. I wanted to talk a little bit about different systems that you can use to run Call of Cthulhu. Or not just... excuse me.
Maybe we do need some systems for house rules for Call of Cthulhu, because I know how much you like the percentile dice system.
Yeah.
God, kill me.
I just... Oh, you also don't like the dice percentile system? Good.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's exactly why I prefer Trail.
Yeah, so there are some other systems for running cosmic horror. One of my favorites is actually Mouse Guard, because in Mouse Guard, you are mice, and everything is terrifying, because you're mice, and everything wants to eat you. So, you know, have fun with that.
So do you reskin it so that it's, instead of facing weasels, you face unknowable monsters, or...
Nah.
Unknowable weasels.
You definitely could reskin it if you wanted to, but I don't think you have to. I think it works fine as is.
Okay.
Like, you know, I think that, like, especially if you introduce some, like, predator that the mice have never seen before, that's, like, you know, migrated here from the north or was, like, blown in on a storm or something. I had a really fun one-shot that was based around the fungi that, or it's not a fungi either, it's a parasite of some kind. The parasite that cats carry that makes rodents not afraid of them. And because Mouse Guard is a setting about sentient mice, the way this worked was that it made the mice, like, form cults to worship this cat. And so there was, like, the Mouse Guard were trying to figure out, like, why mice kept disappearing from this town. And, like, why there was these, like, weird glowing orbs that people would see at night. And, you know, there was this, so we had the cultists.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so we had the cultists, and the glowing orbs were, of course, the cat's eyes, right? Because, you know, cats at night. And so, you know, it turned out that turned out to work pretty well.
I suppose you could also have attack on moose.
Yes!
If you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a anime called Attack on Titan, which is, it's a really weird, it's like it's a mistranslated name or something, but it's about people who live in a walled town in fear of giants who come in and eat people.
Yep, you can definitely do that with Mouse Guard. Another one that you can do cosmic horror in is Chronicles of Darkness or Hunter, which are, like, part of the same family. And they are a little bit more towards the, like, see evil and shoot it in the face school of role-playing. But you can still get some, you can get some scary stuff going with them. Wes, do you have any suggestions for other systems?
Well, we talked a lot about Trail, and that one I can definitely recommend. And thinking about what you said about duration of the campaign, character creation in Trail actually sets you up pretty much for one shots. You have investigative abilities and general abilities and kind of a set number of points you can allocate. And when you spend those points, they don't refresh. So it's kind of representing that your character is steadily getting worse than they were at the beginning of the game. So extended campaigns are really not that practical. You know, I think that I was recently browsing through the fifth edition Dungeon Masters book, and they included some sanity and horror elements. And I mean, the whole warlock class included the great old ones now. So it's feasible if you wanted to modify your D&D world a little bit to pull those extra rules from the DM book and get your cosmic horror on.
I feel like for the cosmic horror fights to be effective, and I mean, Wes, it sounds like when you were running a campaign, you chose to go with the old school, you know, with characters that were not fighters. I feel like cosmic horror is at its best when monsters aren't fought, you know, through physical, regular physical means with regular weapons.
Yeah.
When you have to, like, make a circle of salt or do something else that's sort of weird and arcane. And I don't know if D&D, whether D&D supports that very well.
No, it's totally, I mean, it's definitely that pulpy cosmic horror where you can just load up on guns and whatever and just go destroy the unknowable with guns. That's fun.
Yeah, I mean, D&D would not be my first choice, but I know a lot of people are very fond of the Ravenloft D&D setting, which has cosmic horror elements in it. So it can be done. I just think that you are doing more work than you have to. If you're using D&D is my,
you can probably maintain a better cosmic horror story with less dice. I rolling dice is not scary. The less of that, the better, I think.
I guess there's kind of an empowerment aspect of usually if you're rolling dice is because you're proactively taking an action.
Also, just like once dice are involved, it's like it becomes more about the mechanics than about what's happening.
It pulls you out of the story.
I think that dice can be used to make the horror hit harder, like just especially just like I think it's important to have the mechanics back up what's happening. But in general, you don't want to roll too many dice. Like, if you roll too often, it gets distracting, nothing else. But all right, we are definitely out of time. We're probably over our time. Thank you again for joining us, Wes.
Thank you for having me.
And bringing your Trail of Cthulhu experience to this. The only experience I've had with that system was when I played the Vampires versus Super Spies edition of the game. Knights Black Agents, I think it's called. That was weird. Huh. But if anything that we've said piqued your interest, you guys at home, you can email us at podcast@mythkoreans.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.